So last week, we had started this text with an invocation to the Lord, asking for the Lord's blessings for these studies. But I thought before we proceed on this text, let us think a little about what are we seeking from this life. Why am I here and what is our purpose? At least the majority of us think like that. And then we can continue with the text next week. So what do we want from life? If you ask anybody, they'll say, I want a sorrow-free life. I don't want problems. You know, life has so many problems, physical problems, mental problems. You know, weather is bad, or the government I don't like, or my neighbor, or my spouse, or my child, or my job, or I don't want problems. So I want a sorrow-free life, okay? Then he says, I want a predictable life. I want to know what is happening. Even if problems are going to come, if I know ahead of time, then that is good. Say the power is going to go out. And PG&E tells you, you know, for the next 4 hours, in this part of town, you won't have power. Okay, I can prepare. But if suddenly the power goes out, you know, then I don't know, my fridge, my things, everything. Even death, you know, suppose I know, okay, I'm suffering from this illness, I'll die in 6 months or a year, then I can prepare. But we don't know, you know, when death will come. I might be crossing the street and get hit, or a drunk driver, or some heart attack. We don't know. Even people, we want predictable people. I want somebody I can depend on. This guy, you know, he's so undependable. You give him a job, he never does it. So I want people who are predictable. And then we are looking for permanence. Suppose there is a filter in this that you have to change every 3 days. I don't want that. I want a filter that I can change 6 months. So we want permanence. We want permanence from, not only that, we want permanence in our life. We want to keep living forever. We want permanence in relationships. May my husband and wife, may we keep loving each other from the day we were married till now. You know, it may not change. May my children. So we are looking for permanence. So that is what everybody wants. They want a sorrow-free, predictable, and permanent life. Then they want fun. You know, life should be fun. I should have enjoyment. I should have all the pleasures, enough to eat and enough to drink and all the entertainment and joy and pleasure, everything I must have. You say, well, for that, you need objects. To have fun, you need objects. You need, so I must have objects. So I find that this person has this object and he seems very happy. He has a big house, has a big car, has all this money. He must be very happy. So I must also have the same objects. So then I start my process of acquiring objects. Then I say, the objects I have are not good enough. I need to upgrade. You know, I have this old 17-inch TV, and I don't get any channels. I need a 40-inch LED plasma, which I can get 200 channels. Nowadays, they have TVs with 1,000 channels. So I must upgrade. So I go about acquiring objects, possessing objects, thinking that objects will, more objects means more happiness. And that's how we equate. The more toys he has, the happier he is. So, you know, that's our, from childhood, we are conditioned that this boy has more toys than me, this girl has more dolls than me, so she must be happier. So then to acquire more objects, obviously I need more money. You know, without money, I cannot buy objects. Objects are available. Malls are full. There's all this jewelry and all the clothes and all this furniture and new cars and new models coming and the new TVs and the new phones and the new i5 and i6 and i7. They keep coming. So I need money. So then what do? I go out and earn money and I work hard morning to night. And then even from childhood, we condition our children, you know, pick a career that will give you more money. And they say, this is the hot career. For example, at one time, engineering was very important. You know, you had to be an engineer. Then it said, no, accounting and law. Okay, then it switched to medicine. You know, everybody wanted to become a doctor. I remember when we were growing up, everybody either went into medicine or engineering. Now it is computers, you know, high tech. You have to have information systems, MIS, software and hardware and all that. And even that is old now. Now it is biotech. If you are no biotech, if you know genetic engineering, if you know all this cloning and all. So the industries keep changing, and also we encourage our children, take that profession where you will become irreplaceable. In your company also, you should be irreplaceable. You should have all the passwords. You should have all the controls. You should be doing so much work. So either I take a position that makes me irreplaceable, or a profession, you know, upcoming profession. Why? So I may earn more money. Not only we are looking for physical happiness, but emotional. As we said, you know, I want to be entertained. So I had to go to all the movies and the operas and the drama and theater and TV. And then we look for friends, you know, that we can have fun with and we can enjoy ourselves. So the life is spent in pursuit of joy. And then some people don't find it in the world, then they look in alcohol or drugs or even psychiatric medicines. Why? So I may get emotional satisfaction. Others look for intellectual satisfaction. I should know everything about every subject. You know, if people are discussing astronomy, I should be able to speak. If people are talking about sports, I should know about sports. In a group, I should never be silent. Otherwise, they'll say, this person is dumb. If they're talking sports, I should know who Donald Sterling is and what, you know. If I don't, then, you know, I am a nobody. And we find people, they look so successful, they are so rich, but they open their mouth and you can see they don't know anything. This person is not worth anything. So I look for emotional and I look for intellectual. So I'm always on the net, you know, surfing the net, reading the newspaper, studying, reading. Why? So that I may be the most intelligent, at least appear the most intelligent. And our knowledge is not deep on one subject, but we know enough about every subject so that we look. And our life is a constant struggle, you know, trying to physically, emotionally, intellectually. Then we say, it's okay, I know a lot and I have money, but I do not have a healthy body. And what use is it? I have this $1 million mansion and I have all the foods of the world, Chinese, Mexican, but I can't eat because my stomach won't digest. And so the guy is sitting home miserable. Why? Because he doesn't have a healthy body. So then we start chasing after health. So I have to improve my figure. So men go and they get a V-shaped figure, you know, with the no belly, six pack. And then women want this perfect, you know, hourglass figure. So we go to the gym and we get personal trainers and then we do all this stuff. That doesn't work. We go to the plastic surgeon, you know, let him remove my wrinkles and Botox and, you know, fix this and augment this. And constantly there is a struggle. And the world is ready to provide it. They say, you want, you know, previously it was fat was bad, you know, carbs were good. Then now carbs are bad, now protein is good. So they have this new protein, you know, branched chain amino acids and these new supplements and then these new pills. And then these pills that you take at night and whole night it burns your fat. All this. And the world is ready. You know, we go to trainers, we go to all this. Why? So I need a healthy body. And then we spend so much money and we spend so much time and all our energy is spent in improving the body and exercising and doing this and doing that. And then with old age, obviously, you know, things are not going to be the same. The body will change, things will decline. And then we get depressed and then we get sorrowful. Especially we find a lot of these people who are in the, you know, film industry or in the entertainment, their whole life is geared towards body. So that's what they call these people. They have such a strong body identification that everything I do in my life is for the body, for improving the body, for the body's possessions. You know, not only the body's uptake, but the body's possessions, as we said, better house, better car, better things. Okay, now I got a healthy body. Then I say, I need to improve my location. So, well, what's wrong with your location? No, I live in a beautiful big house, but the neighborhood has declined. You know, I have a very good house, but the people around, they're not of good quality, you know, so I need to move. This neighborhood has gone down, even though I have a huge house, but, or, you know, I live in a country where there is so much terrorism and there is violence, and I don't know when the government will change and they'll become socialist and they'll come and take over my wealth, and they will raise my taxes, and they will, you know, take over my property. We find in many countries when the, you know, government becomes socialist, then they start nationalizing industries and they take over the steel industry and they take over the shipping industry. So I don't know what's going to happen. So I need to move to a country where there is low taxes. So I move to the Bahamas. So I leave my friends and leave my family. Why? So I should save taxes. So I move to Bahamas or move to a state where the taxes are low. So constantly we are in the struggle to improve, to change. And our whole life is spent in that. Then I say, I should have no problems. You know, life has so many problems, but how can I reduce my problems? How can I reduce my difficulties? So I do all these things to reduce my problems. They say, if I do not get problems, but at least I should not become a problem for others. That's another thing. You know, I should be helpful to others. I should be kind. This reminds me of a cartoon of Dennis the Menace. And his dad comes home and Dennis is sitting outside the house. So dad says, Dennis, what are you doing? He says, I'm helping mom. He says, you're helping mom? How? By staying outside the house. So some people are problem just by where they are. So at least I say, I should not be a problem for others. I should not get problems from the world. And I should not give problems to the world. There are some people who think like that. Others say, I don't care what the world, you know, what happens to the world. I want to be happy. I want to be successful. I want to be rich. And no matter how many people I trample over, it doesn't matter as long as I get what I want. So that is the second group. Then there are other people who say, I have money. I have house. I have a car. But I need to improve my social circle. You know, the people I associate with, they are average. You know, they only belong to the 500,000 club. You know, I want to associate with the people who have $1 million, $2 million homes and who have big yards and who have big. These people, I don't think they are of my standard. So then I try to start associating with those people. And then when I have a party, I say I must invite all those people. So why? Because so that when they have a party, they invite me. I want to be in the right circle. And then what do I do to impress people? I buy a bigger house and I buy a Mercedes even though I can't afford it. And I'm stressed out. Our Guruji Swami Tejomayananda says it very beautifully, the head of our mission. He says, we spend our life buying things that we do not need with money that we do not have. To impress people that we do not like. So that is our whole life. You know, we are just buying, acquiring just so that I may look, and then when I lose my job, and then I don't have enough money to maintain my house, maintain my car, and then I, you know, struggle, and I, you know, why? Because now what will people think? So, we try to improve our body, our mind, our intelligence, and our circle. But the problem is that nobody questions this. Nobody asks, why are we doing this? Why am I working so hard? Why am I acquiring? Why am I possessing? Is there any greater purpose in life? And that's what, you know, these books answer for us. But the majority of the people, say if a young man asks this question, what will they say? Oh, you know, he's only 20 or 25. He's already asking this question. Maybe he'll become a monk. It's very dangerous. So we quickly find, you know, okay, you need to find a girlfriend and get married, or we go get him a job. Why? Because we don't want him to question. We want, see, everybody is following one particular path from birth to death, and somebody is following a different path, and we always think that's wrong. And that's what happened with the prophets and with the saints, because they dared to question what the 99.999 out of 1,000 people are going in one way, and one tries to go in another way. Either they drag him to join them, force him, or they torture him, kill him, eliminate him. And that's what we find with all these saints and prophets. Not only that, but even the divinity, even the consciousness, when you start on the spiritual path, it is very interesting. You will get a lot of material success. You will have success. Suddenly you will find that, oh, money is coming, or you got a wonderful job, or you have an offer, you know, where you have to move to a different state and a different country. Why is that? Because the God or the divinity wants to know, is your desire really genuine? Are you really motivated? Are you really sincere? So when I'm on the spiritual path, there will be temptations, there will be obstacles, there will be problems. It is from that total consciousness to test me and see that, am I really serious on this path? Am I? And the world will create obstacles, and sometimes divinity may not create obstacles in the sense of lack of success. Actually, you may get too much success. So that is what they're saying, that one has to question. One has to see that, why am I doing what am I doing? What I have been doing from childhood onwards, is that really the correct path that I want? Is it what's going to, it may help me in the material world. It may help me be successful. But is it going to help me in my spiritual journey? Is it going to help me to evolve? And so that is the kind of questions that are raised in this book, as to how, through love of God, through service, how can I evolve to become a better individual? And when we question, we find that the end result of all worldly pursuits and acquisitions, the end result is sorrow. How do you say that? You know, isn't when I buy a new car or a new house or when I earn $1 million, how can you say the end result is sorrow? But think about it. To earn the $1 million, say, okay, I got, how hard did I have to work? I had to work so many hours. I sacrificed my family life, my children. I sacrificed my youth, and I worked through my day and night, and, you know, late hours, and worked overtime, or I had to cheat some people, or I had to, you know, some illegal or immoral or unethical methods. I had to earn the money. So earning is sorrowful. Okay, now I got the money. Okay, that's very good. Now, to preserve it is another sorrow. Why? I have this money in the bank, you know, and all it is doing is making me 0.5% or 1%, or in this fund, I'm getting only 2%. And my friend tells me, you know, you put it in these stocks, it's going to make you 30% just like that. So I shift my money into stocks and thinking, and I find a broker. And then every day I'm watching the stock market. When the stock market is up, my blood pressure is up. When the stock market is down, my blood pressure is down. I'm stressed up and down every day. Why? Because, oh, now the market is collapsed. Now there is a recession. Or sometimes, you know, some people say invest in foreign stocks, you know, invest in foreign countries. So I do that. And then every day I'm reading the paper. Now I have my money invested in this country, but now in this country there is a revolution. So I have more stress. Then earning the money became stress. Maintaining it became stress. Then spending it is another stress. My daughter will come, Dad, this iPhone, it's old. This iPad, it's an old model. I want a new one. I'll say, you know what? When I was growing up, I didn't have iPhone. I didn't have... Dad, I'm not you. All my friends, you send me to a nice college. All my friends have a new iPhone. They have a new... I cannot study like that. Mother of the house will say, okay, you know, you buy her what she needs. You know, you have so much money. So The point is that the end result of all possessions, earning is sorrowful, maintenance is sorrowful, spending is sorrowful. And then at the end, you find that you spent your whole life just thinking about money, 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 or objects, 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 things. And then when do you have time to think about God? Or when do you have time to think about spirituality? When do you have time to think about evolution? And the same is with everything, even, you know, too much dependence on anything. We find that not only the result is sorrowful, but it is also dependence. Like at one time, you know, we didn't have cell phones and our life was fine. And now, first it's nice to have a cell phone. Now I have to have a cell phone. It is the same thing, everything else. You know, in the olden days, not everybody had a car, but they managed. Now you can't. So the point is that after some time, initially we are the master. You know, I'm the master of my objects. I own this and I own that. After some time, the objects own me, where I become so dependent that no matter what happens, my life is not complete. It's not full. Why? Because I don't have this object, I don't have that object. Or I have some object, but my neighbor has a better object, or my brother-in-law, you know, has a better car, or he has a better house. So I'm all the time competing, trying to keep up with the Jones. So the end result of all of this is that it guarantees dissatisfaction. Why? Because everything is temporary. Everything is temporary and everything is associated with pain. And whatever is temporary, it is bound to change. And whatever is changing is bound to give you pain, is bound to give you sorrow. So that is what we have studied today, that what are we seeking in this world? Actually, if you look at it, we are looking for permanent happiness. We're looking for permanent joy. We're looking for permanent bliss. We're looking for permanent happiness. But unfortunately, we have trained our mind and our sense organs to look outside into the world of objects, emotions, and thoughts. And we think that this world will give us permanent happiness, permanent joy, permanent bliss. But this world is constantly changing. The objects of the world are changing. The people are changing. The emotional needs are changing. My ideas are changing. So in this changing world where people are changing, objects are changing, the government is changing, weather is changing, situations are changing, we are looking for permanent happiness. And what the scriptures tell us, that happiness is not in objects, it's not in things, it's not in people, is only within. And unless you go within and find the happiness, when you go within, that's what we learn in our meditation, that's what we learn in our spiritual classes, that through practice of spirituality, through turning our mind towards God, because if you want permanent happiness, you have to find it in permanent things. And the only permanent thing is that God, which we call as consciousness, Om. So through the practice of spirituality, through learning, through prayers, through meditation, you come to discover the source of joy within. And so that is what we are actually seeking. All of us are seeking permanent happiness. And why do we want to live forever? Why? Because our nature is permanent. Actually, I am of the nature of permanent existence, permanent bliss, permanent joy, because as the consciousness, I always was. I always existed, and that is our true nature. So through meditation and through prayer, we come to that what are we seeking? We are seeking for happiness within, but in our mistake, we spend all this time in acquiring. So this is just, I thought I would summarize what are the problems of today's world and what are we dealing with. And then next week onward, we'll continue this book, which will tell us how to find that joy within, how to find it in God, and where to discover. So love of God, this is why this book is called Bhakti Sudha, which means nectar of devotion, how I can develop devotion and love for God. So this is would there be any comments or any questions, anything you would like to talk about? No, sutra means, sutra is a aphorism. It's like a truth. Sudha means a nectar, nectar of devotion. So sudha and sutra are two different words. Sutra is like aphorism, like a single line which has a very high meaning, very powerful meaning. Narad Bhakti Sutra means like, Narad Bhakti means in Narad has written aphorisms, one line, truthful statements that have a very high meaning. But sudha means nectar. Yeah, thank you for asking. Yeah, I think what happens is that when you start on the spiritual path and you start doing good, yes, temptations do come, especially those who are very serious on the spiritual path, if they are meditating or if they are studying. And even in our Puranas, in our scriptures, they talk about these people who were into deep meditation, and even the gods in heaven would send dancing girls to disturb them so that they may not become more powerful, you know, because that is the idea. But also, yes, when you are on the spiritual path, you may sometimes get diverted either by success or by friends. You know, friend will say, why are you going to those boring lectures? You know, come and let's, we are having a party, a cocktails, you know, let's get together and drink. This is a lot more fun than, you know, just sitting and listening to some boring Swami who is talking, who is frustrated with life. And so that's why he became a monk. And now he's trying to get all of us to also stop enjoying life. So yeah, you will get distracted, you know, and it could be through success or it could be through people. But yes, on the spiritual path, sometimes we do encounter obstacles, or sometimes the obstacles come from our own mind. Because I say, you know, all day I just sit and meditate and pray and all my friends are having so much fun. They're having such a great time. And I am, you know, so within yourself, you will start getting doubts that is my path correct or is my path clear? So yeah, there will be obstacles. They could be from success or they could be from your own mind. That's why when we pray, we say Shanti, Shanti, Shanti 3 times. You know, why do we say Shanti 3 times? Because in our spiritual journey, there may be 3 kinds of obstacles. Shanti means peace. So there are 3 kinds of obstacles. One is obstacles that come from the environment. Like there may be earthquakes, floods, you know, thunderstorms, hurricanes, or like we had tornadoes. So earthquakes, so those kind of problems, may they not disturb me, you know. The second is problems come from around us, from my neighbor or from my spouse or from my child or from my parents or from my work or from my associates. So it's the second kind. So may there not be problems from the cosmos. May there not be problems in my neighborhood. You know, may there be peace in the cosmos. May there be peace in my neighborhood with my spouse, my child, my family. And the third is, may there be peace within. Because the main thing that disturbs us is the inner disturbance. You know, the inner agitations of the mind, where my mind is disturbed or agitated or upset or angry, or just gets bored and, you know, is looking for newness, looking for excitement. So, yes, so these are the 3 kinds of obstacles that come on the spiritual path. And so that's why we always are watchful that may there not be, and the biggest one is the one from within, because that is where most of the problems arise from. When I sit for meditation, my mind starts wandering, or when I decide I'm going to go and help somebody, the mind says, you know, it's too hot outside. You know why? I said I was going to go build a house, you know, Habitat for Humanity. And the mind said, it's so hot. It's 9,500 degrees. What? Forget about it. You know? So, yeah. So there are 3 kinds. Yes. So you always ask for peace 3 times. Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. May there be peace in the cosmos, and then maybe the peace in my neighborhood. May there not be violence and riots and all. And then may there be peace within. May I not get within any anger or greed or jealousy or hatred or negative thoughts. So may I have positive thinking within. No, in the nature. It can be the world also, but mostly in nature. You know, may there not be earthquakes and tornadoes and, you know, volcanoes and hurricanes and all that. And then the neighborhood includes the world. Or you can, yeah, I think the neighborhood includes the world. That in my world, you know, generally something happening in Africa doesn't affect me directly. You know, or something happened, like children died in South Korea, I feel bad, but it doesn't affect me. Mostly it is in my world, there will be peace. But yeah, it is good if there's peace in the world and there's less violence in the Middle East, and it's all good. Yes. So one is in the cosmos, one is in the world around me, and then one is within me.